Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have an exciting new guest for you today, and we go out of our way. Beth loves it, in fact. She loves to go out and find interesting and new guests for us. Now, often enough, we bring guests back because they're really good, but we also are on a continuing mission, just like Star Trek, to seek out and find new life forms, and we have one today for you that you will find very interesting. And her name is Katie Keener-Abert. And she is a journalist, a very accomplished journalist, who's going to bring to us a lot of perspective on from the writing she's done. And she's written for Financial Planning Magazine. In fact, I've got a whole long list of publications she's contributed to over the years: Independent Banker, Secured Lender, Bank News, Risk and Insurance, Insurance Networking News, a long list of different publications. And she's done that in a lot of different financial topics. So we've got several recent writings that she's done that really tie directly into the theme of this program, and we're going to get into that with her. She's a graduate of Clemson University with a degree of in psychology, and she lives in California, which is probably a wonderful place to live. Katie, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, tell me about where you live. It looks like you're leading a pretty active lifestyle.
Oh, yes.
Hiking and kayaking and skiing with your husband.
Yes, we raised our children in San Diego, and then about 3 years ago, we moved, my husband and I, after our children started college, we moved 3 hours north to the mountains north of San Bernardino, and so we're about 80 miles due east of Los Angeles and about 20 miles from a ski resort. So every week we do hike or kayak on Big Bear Lake or in the winter ski. So it's a lovely place.
Well, see, my introduction, Katie, was for my listeners to like you. Now they yeah. hate you, okay?
That's usually when I start getting sources irritated with.
Well, I can see how it's awfully convenient to be a journalist that you can write anywhere, you know, you're out there on some big rock with your laptop.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, okay, thanks. All right, you're rubbing it in now. All right. So listen, I want to leverage, and the reason I was excited to get you on the program, Katie, is that you have seen so much, and you've done so much research in these areas of financial and estate planning and for these very well-respected organizations and publications. And so let's dive in. There's a lot of things that seniors and retirees can mess up, or even baby boomers, those that are approaching retirement, can mess up, and we want to help them navigate these landmines and just be on the lookout for different things that may be an issue. And I will start with one that I've actually talked about on the program before, but I think it's really important for people to be thinking about, is for parents to discuss not just their estate planning, but really their final wishes with their family members. Give us a little bit of your perspective on what you've seen there and why that's so important.
Well, good. Yes, that's also a very important topic to me. And so I was very happy to start writing that for financial planning. So planners tell me that it is always good to discuss the final wishes, and even if a person has a will or trust, because that actually gives loved ones time to adjust emotionally to their wishes. And this is particularly important if there are any longstanding issues between their children. Say, siblings who think they have sorted out issues years ago may still have unresolved emotions that come to the forefront when their parents die.
Yeah.
Say one child was favored over another or was more financially dependent on the parent than their siblings, and then the parent ends up leaving more to that child than to the others. Or say the parent divides everything equally, but one child thought that they should have received more because they moved their elderly parent into their home and took care of them until they died. So even if adult children can accept these things intellectually, well, emotionally, these kind of issues, particularly after a parent's death, can rekindle feelings of resentment toward their siblings.
Yeah, mom always liked you better.
yes, and it comes out even when you're an adult and you feel like you've resolved those issues. When the parent dies, the death itself can be a very tough emotion for children to deal with. So planners tell me that they actually recommend that families work through these issues with a counselor before their parent's death.
Yeah, that and you know, I was going to ask you, and you beat me to it. What can the parents do to facilitate some of this One is simply just bringing it up and talking about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and my dad did this the other day to me. He's like, by the way, don't forget, I want this, this, and this. And we're just sitting there talking about other stuff. I'm like, whoa, where'd that come from, man? But it was good. I mean, it's good just to remind me of what he wants. And I'm like, that's fine. Yes, sure. Whatever you want, I will make sure we take care of. But, and that lets, you know, you've hit a good point, Katie, and that is letting people prepare, not the logic and, you know, the intellectual part, but just the reconciling themselves to understanding that this is where things will be at the point and mom and dad are not always going to be there and, you know, just to prepare emotionally.
Right, exactly.
That's good. That's good. And the parent, I think, you know, there's always, I've read writings about, hey, why it's important to engage your parents in these conversations, but it's still, you know, children still look to their parents, even if they're 50 years old, they're still looking to their parents to kind of lead that conversation. So I think the message here is, especially for parents, that they lead that conversation, especially when you have what you just described, Katie, as some of those wrinkles to a different or unequal distributions mm-hmm. after their death being what the parents want, that, boy, they better have that conversation.
Yes, that's what I found out.
Yeah, good stuff, good stuff. And then, so they should talk about any of those, any other things they should be communicating to the children beyond?
Yes, absolutely. They should talk about where they want to be buried or cremated, or actually if they want their entire body to be donated to a university for scientific research. In fact, actually, personally, I know someone who had wanted to donate her body, but was advised that she needed the consent of all of her adult children ahead of time. Hmm. So when she discussed this issue during a holiday visit with all of her children, one of her daughters said she'd be very upset if she couldn't visit her mom's gravesite. And so the mom decided that it was actually worth more not to upset her daughter than to donate her entire body. Now, other parents may decide differently after having such conversations, but planners tell me it's actually always good to lay out everything up front with family members to lessen problems after someone dies.
That's good, Katie, and I have to confess it. I found that kind of funny because I could see, you know, you got to pick your right time. Hey, pass the cornbread and the turkey. And by the way, I want my body donated to science. Yeah, you got to pick your moment. But when the family's all together, of course, you know, especially if you need them all to buy into it. And you know, also, it may be that they could say, all right, I'm going to do this. And if that's your concern about being able to visit somewhere, well, then I'll have a grave marker, or we'll mm-hmm. find some way for you to have a place to go that, you know, will be a symbolic of your being able to commune with me.
That's an excellent idea.
No, just, hey, write about it.
That's a good idea.
That's good. Good Katie. Yeah, good, Katie. So there's the timing of this. There's these issues. Now, another big one, and I want to get into this after the break. We'll grab a quick break and we'll come right back, Katie. But the big one is also to address these things while people have their mental faculties and they're competent, because there are going to be things that may come that result from incompetence or dementia mm-hmm. that people need to be thinking about. If you're just joining us, Katie Keener Hebert is our guest, and she's a journalist and has written for a multitude of publications. You'll find her work on Financial Planning Magazine. You can go to the website, financial-planning.com, and a lot of good work she's doing. And we'll grab a quick break, and we'll be right back with Katie. Stay right there.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialists, and certified annuity specialists. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and individualized attention to each and every one of our clients. Count on Holland Financial for your financial advice, not only for today, but for many years to come. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
And welcome back. And we are helping you plan stronger by having great guests like Katie Keener Hebert to help us unwind and understand some of the issues that you may face in planning your future. And part of that is the estate planning that we've been talking about with Katie. And Katie comes to us as a journalist for several publications and has written with a lot of great organizations, including Financial Planning. And that's the one that we have found some great work by her. Welcome back, Katie. Let's talk a little bit about the issue of dementia and mm-hmm. how, you know, people can be thinking about that both from the personal human part of it, as well as getting certain documents in mm-hmm. place. So what are you seeing as really the key points here?
Sure, sure. Well, it's very important for clients, for people, before they start declining in health, to consult with an attorney to make sure that the proper documents in place. And those documents include a power of attorney, a living will, and the correct HIPAA form. And HIPAA stands for the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996. And part of that law is meant to protect the confidentiality and security of healthcare information. And all of these documents enable a designated person to meet and speak with doctors, hospitals, nursing care facilities, pharmacies, and other parties.
That's good.
There's different types of power of attorney forms that people can consider, and they can either ask their attorney or a financial planner about them, or they can first research them on the internet, such as on websites like ElderLawNet.
Good. Well, and there's several things there that are very important, Katie. I'm glad you made this, you know, kind of as a key thing for people to think about. And number one, I'm a big fan of working with attorneys, and you know, listeners know that I don't have a lot of confidence in you know, a computer telling me what I should do from a legal standpoint. And I also, you know, there's a new thing I'm sure you've seen is a lot of this, you know, robot produced advice out there on the internet. And the fundamental problem with all that is that the computer or the robot, the program, all of that, it doesn't know what you don't know. An attorney will. And that is one of the reasons why I am not threatened at all by the robo-advisor movement. That does not concern me at all. And the legal aspect of this, the attorney is worth every bit of what they are paid to help you understand. And for example, there are you mentioned something that's very important. There are a lot of different types of powers of attorney and ways of doing that. And for our listeners, depending on where they're listening to this program, it varies by state. Certain types of power of attorney documents can be created in some states, and some they can't.
That's an excellent point.
So it's really key for them to have those documents in place, but get with an attorney and, you know, shop around a little bit. There's nothing wrong with interviewing an attorney, and a lot of them will let you talk to them at no obligation to, you know, to see if there's a fit.
So did you want me to explain the different kinds of powers of attorney, or do they vary by state?
They do vary by state. I think the key point you made, which is a really good one, is that they are different types. And if you want to kind of just give us an overview of the different types, and I'll be happy to share you some of my thoughts about them.
All right. Well, first, there is a limited power of attorney form, which gives someone else the power to act on one's behalf for a very limited purpose and for a very limited time, such as giving someone the right to sign a deed to property for oneself if traveling on that day.
Good.
Then there is a general power of attorney form that gives an attorney, in fact, all of one's powers and rights, such as the right to sign documents, pay bills, and conduct financial transactions on one's behalf. There is a durable power of attorney form that can be general or limited in scope, and it's for use when one becomes incapacitated. There is also a springing power of attorney form that allows an attorney, in fact, to act on one's behalf if the person becomes incapacitated, but it does not become effective until the person actually is incapacitated. Within this document, it's critical to clearly define the standard for determining incapacity and triggering the power of attorney.
That's good. All of those, some of them you can do in certain states, from my understanding. I'm not an attorney and don't play one on TV or radio, but some of them you can do in certain states, some you may not be able to, and they have, some of them have different, for example, in Florida, Katie, you know, our power of attorney documents, you have to back up the truck to deliver it. I mean, it's like huge. It's huge. And the attorney, maybe the attorneys are charging by the page. No, not really. But they're getting thicker because of just the more specificity that's required under state statute in Florida for them to work. But these are documents people really need to make sure they have when, Katie, before, right?
Right.
Because it doesn't do you any, you can't get one. If you say, oh, you know what? I'm incompetent today. I'm going to go get that document prepared by the attorney.
Now, here's the most interesting piece of information I heard from a planner when I did that article on power of attorney forms, is that she told me that it's actually not enough to work with one attorney in drafting a power of attorney form, as certain financial institutions prefer people to sign their own power of attorney form. So in addition to drafting forms with their attorneys, people should also ask each of the institutions holding their major accounts what they require.
That's a good point, because some will have their own form, of course, and then some will say, no, your power of attorney is, and we have dealt with that in certain situations, and that's where you have to make sure that they will accept those documents, and good to be thinking ahead with that, because once, and I've dealt with this, out here, on the street, so to speak, Katie, where I've had people that become incompetent, either temporary or permanently, and those documents, oh my gosh, what a difference they make.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
Because without them, you're adrift and bills don't get paid, or that you have to, then there's a significant, if people are shy about getting some of these documents done because of the costs, don't be, because if they don't get them done now, it's going to cost 5 to 10 times to go have to ask a court to appoint a guardian and all that stuff versus just simply having these documents in place already. All right, Katie, well, let's do this. Let's grab another quick break and we'll come back. And I want to talk a little bit about another very related topic, and that is long-term care. Okay. So let's do that. If you're just joining us, Katie Keener-Abair is our guest. She's a journalist and written a lot with different publications, but we found some great articles she'd written with financial planning. You can go to financial-planning.com is the website. So financial-planning.com. We'll be right back.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be done in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals, couples, and families plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his client's shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. If you'd like to learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. No cost or obligation. Or visit PlanStronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just joining us, Katie Keener-Abair is our guest, journalist, and prolific, I'll put in front of or after her name. She's got all kinds of stuff she's written. And not only do I applaud that work, Katie, I admire it because I've written a couple of books myself, and I do a weekly column, and it's a lot of work.
Yes.
It is.
It does get easier after you do it for almost 30 years.
Okay. Well, I will certainly grant you that, and I appreciate what you're doing. And part of the convenient thing is having done so much research and written so much on these subjects, it's very good for us to tap into that. I wanted to turn our attention to another related subject as we talk about planning ahead, especially for retirees and seniors, and even baby boomers are doing this, and that is looking at the issue or specter of long-term care. So there are a couple different ways of addressing long-term cares, and there's statistics out there about how likely people are to need it. You know, usually people kind of settle on this kind of two-thirds may need it after 65, and so it's a big issue, and the costs are high. So what are you seeing in the industry that are typically been the approaches that financial planners are taking to address this significant expense?
Yes, I heard it's one of the main expenses that people should prepare for as they get older. So, and there's a variety of ways that people can consider to help fund long-term care. And experts tell me that it actually really depends on the person's circumstances. So standalone long-term care policies typically have more features such as inflation protection, they provide the greatest flexibility in choosing the level and the type of benefits. But some customers worry about future premium increases for such policies and about paying for coverage they may not ever use. So buying riders on a life insurance policy that cover those issues might be a better choice for those people.
Excellent. And, I can tell you that I've used both, Katie, and it's interesting. You're spot on. I mean, the pay every year traditional long-term care policy has a lot of benefits, can have, there's a lot of nice features there. But you made the point about one of its biggest shortcomings is, number one, you may pay premiums for 20 years and never use it, and you've paid all that premium. Now, you can make the argument, well, that's like, paying for fire insurance on your house. You hope to God you never need that either. and you hope it's the worst money you ever spent. And I would feel that way about a long-term care policy that I'm paying for every year. But the other issue which you hit on, which is I've seen firsthand, is the potential for a rate increase. The insurance companies can raise the rate on that pay every year long-term care premium.
Right, right. So for some people who want to think of an alternative, a long-term care rider on a life insurance policy is typically available for an additional cost. So there is some of that same concern about paying for coverage that is not used. But the monthly benefit amount is a known amount, and it's usually about 2% of the face amount of the life insurance policy, and the cost is generally guaranteed at issue.
Yeah, and you can also, some of those policies actually are very attractive, and that lets you avoid that whole issue of number one, you know, paying for something you never have any getting benefit out of, and number two, the potential of raising premium. I saw one time somebody came in, had not put this policy in place for them, Katie, but they had an old policy, and they got a premium notice of an 80% rate, 80% increase of their premium. So they got you over a barrel, let's just be honest. And
you've been in the policy for so long.
Exactly.
You have to weigh, you know, if you want to keep in it. So.
But the policies of the life insurance-based long-term care policy, if somebody's got some cash on hand and they don't want it to sit and make 1% at the bank or less, they can get one of these policies. And one of the things that's really neat about them is not only do they have a death benefit if you never use a long-term care feature, but there are several policies out there that let you get your money back, all of it. So if you put in $50,000 or $100,000 and you buy this policy with a single payment, and down the road you change your mind or you decide to buy into a continuing care retirement facility or whatever it is, you can get all of that money back.
That's good to research.
Hey, anytime. Good research. Well, you know what? There's always something new and different out there, and we have to stay abreast of it, and we got to keep up with all these things because, you know, the whole point is being able to, and you said this a minute ago, Katie, is everybody's situation is a little different, and these products and solutions all have to be tailored to the person's situation, and there are many people, either on the in terms of not having enough assets or they have plenty of assets that don't need to get a long-term care policy.
Mm-hmm.
So it will vary. It will vary according to the person. We've got time for probably one more major subject to get to, and I would love to talk to you about what you're seeing with the different strategies and techniques and things to be on the lookout for as it relates to financial abuse, especially with with elders. You know,
right. It's an extremely important topic. And there are a lot of red flags that adult children can look for. They should be looking out for strange requests for withdrawals from the elderly person's account.
Oh, yeah.
Numerous cash withdrawals from ATMs, especially if the elderly person has never used an ATM before.
That would be a good sign.
Yeah. Or can't leave the house without assistance.
Right.
They should be looking out for abrupt changes in the power of attorney or signs of nervousness that suggest that the elderly person is not comfortable with what they're doing. But sometimes spotting these signs can lead to tricky situations, considering that a high percentage of elder abuse is actually perpetrated by family members.
It's probably one of the saddest things I've heard of is that, you know, here you, and there are a lot of reasons why they may do it. They may feel like they're entitled. They may feel like they're going to get it anyway. They may feel like they need it now. They may feel like that, you know, somebody else is going to come in later and try to get it, and they're trying to beat them to the punch. And again, all that emotional baggage from childhood, a whole bunch of stuff. And there are even situations where the child is abusive to the parent. It's an ugly part of our world, unfortunately.
Yes, in fact, signs of abuse can often be entangled in long-standing cloudy family issues such as substance abuse or financial dependency on the elderly relative or even jealousy over what is perceived as preferential treatment toward a particular sibling. So,
Yeah, and you know what? It's a sad thing, but there's even situations where the caregiver, and I use that term with air quotes, a caregiver is kind of controls the person so they continue to have the cow they can milk, so to speak, and keep getting money out of them, and even to the point of keeping them from maybe getting care, medical care that they need.
Yeah.
And then doesn't it just fry you? I mean, that just makes me so angry when I think about it, so I try not to think about it very often.
It's really tough, but one planner told me that it can be really difficult sometimes from the outside looking in, especially if the caretaker is a person's relative.
Yeah.
And sometimes the relationship actually becomes codependent in a way that's hard for other family members to understand. And sometimes things might just look bad, but actually the caretaker may be acting in good faith, and that's just how their relationship is. It might not be abusive, but, I mean, it's not healthy, but it might not be to the point where adult protective services can do anything about
so
it.
So not necessarily parasitic, but more symbiotic.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Well, and all of this ends with, another final risk or concern that I know a lot of retirees have. And it may surprise people to know that even people that are wealthier have this concern, is the concern about running out of money.
Mm-hmm.
I
read stories about that every single morning.
And people, they have options. Obviously, this will, of course, be the thing you would expect me to say, is planning ahead, of course, is how you avoid that. But even with that, there are limited assets, and people just have to realize that they have to do the best they can.
Yes, yes.
Well, I tell you what, Katie, I've enjoyed our conversation. I appreciate your time, and I'm going to be continuing to follow the financial planning articles you're writing, financial-planning.com, and that's where our listeners can go and do more reading there, Katie, of your work. Katie Keener-Abear has been our guest today, journalist, and we really appreciate what she's doing. And Katie, you are welcome back anytime. I enjoyed our conversation.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, too.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.